Welcome to the Future Is podcast, where we explore the future of your life and business. I'm your host, Joe Tobis. I am a future shaper, and in my spare time, I oversee global marketing here at Honeywell. In this episode, we're going to talk about how robots and automation help speed up aspects of a distribution center, like picking items off a shelf or unloading trucks. But before we do, let me give you a little bit of reason for even having this discussion. I did some research, or I should say, Cassie, my producer, did some research. Global e-commerce sales are projected to reach $3.5 trillion this year and approach nearly $5 trillion in 2021. Last year alone, Amazon Prime members ordered more than 2 billion products with one-day delivery or faster. Nearly all experts agree that the years ahead will bring exponentially more packages shipped every year as e-commerce grows, and delivery time expectations will create even more demand for one-day or even same-day shipments. But to us lay people, we see two points of contact, right? We see the click to order, and then we receive the shipment. What we don't see, but we count on blindly, really, is a finely tuned process to literally connect those dots. Today, we're talking with Eric Rice, who's involved in that in-between section. He works on distribution center technology for Honeywell, and he expects same-day delivery to be as common as free two-day shipping within the next 3 to 5 years. So, Eric, with that introduction, welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
So, Eric, tell me, what do you do?
I'm a product manager here at Honeywell Intelligrated, focusing on our warehouse and automation systems.
And what are warehouse automation systems?
There's a lot of different types of warehouse automation. So there's software for picking, there's devices for picking, there's also conveyor equipment. So traditional conveyor equipment like sortation equipment, merging equipment, transportation conveyor, and then also robotics. So there's robots that stay in one place. There's also robots that are autonomous and can move around the building, and they may fulfill a few different jobs like doing some kind of picking or bringing product to users so that they can do some picking. Or they may transport goods from one place to another, or even unload trucks and sort out orders.
All right. I love this. I'm going to make you go back in time a little bit, Eric, and help me, who doesn't go to a warehouse very often, understand what's happened. As I said in my introduction, as a consumer, we sort of just rely blindly on whatever we ordered. You know, we ordered that t-shirt on Amazon and it shows up the next day. How has that warehouse and I guess the overall logistics changed in, say, the last 10 years? It has to be drastically, considering consumers' expectations and the ability to fulfill orders as quickly as they have.
Sure. Yeah. So I think that over the last 10 years, warehouses become more and more complex. So warehouse operators are looking for more types of equipment and technology that can help either augment labor or replace labor, because currently it's very difficult to find labor in this market.
Mm. But even more specifically, Eric, this is curiosity here. So 10 years ago, maybe it's even longer, you tell me the time frame. I have to imagine this was all human exercise. Maybe there was some basic automation built in, but more and more we've created automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, software technology that kind of connects the dots on this. Was there any specific change milestone-wise that really drastically changed how we look at warehouses in the last few years?
That's a good question, Joe. I'm going to have to say that, you know, software and the automation piece is just becoming more and more centric in the operation. Mm. It used to be that, you know, a conveyor was really just to move product from one point in the warehouse to another point in the warehouse, you know, from receiving to get it over to shipping. Well, now orders are much more complex. And instead of shipping from, you know, to a retail store, right, now you're shipping to individual customers. So you're not shipping a case of product of all the same product, right, to your retail store to put on a shelf. Now you have to solve the problem of, you know, I'm placing this online order and I want these 10 different things. Well, these 10 different things all come from different cases, maybe different areas of a warehouse. So now what you're seeing are systems that are much more complex in their ability to, you know, you receive product in, but then that product is put away in much more sophisticated ways. It may be in some kind of picking automation, or like, you know, some kind of robotics that's doing that. It may be some sort of automated storage and retrieval system that's putting that inventory away later to be picked. It could go back on traditional, what we call pick module shelves, where an operator is going to walk back and forth and grab things and throw it in a tote. But what you're seeing is, you know, instead of the warehouse just being receiving the shipping, now it's receiving, there's order consolidation, there's a lot of quality assurance, and you hit all these areas before you even think about going out to that outbound shipping sorter. So there's a lot of complexity in that routing around the building. So you receive product, and then you have to figure out, okay, I need all these different pieces from my inventory to fulfill this individual customer's order. So now we have, you know, large tilt tray or crossbelt sortation systems that are doing order consolidation, or maybe a customer chooses to do that with what's called a put wall. So there's people putting product in the back of this put wall, and there's people sweeping orders out of the front of it. And then it goes on to the shipping system.
Right. So Eric, you're describing sort of the transition that we've made from warehouses being delivery mechanisms to retail outlets, in essence, a lot of shipment to one piece to many, which is the consumerized version that we've created with e-commerce, which really throws warehouses into it overhauls everything about it. It reverses everything about how warehouses were originally created, really.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, if a customer has a retail warehouse, right, that they're using today to distribute to their stores, it might not be very well suited to just say, I'm going to do e-commerce out of this warehouse today. You know, the layout's difficult to work with. The areas don't exist within the building to process the orders.
Right.
And they're, you know, you may end up having to do a completely manual solution inside that automated warehouse that services retail to get your e-commerce orders fulfilled. And you probably, if you're doing that, it's probably not going to be able to keep up with the demand that you need.
Right. So I imagine in your role, you're dealing with customers who are either starting or are on the path in making that transition, and maybe even in a path towards like growing their businesses and needing those things. What are some of like the, you know, we talk about this in business, pain points that your customers deal with, and how does it affect, you know, how we're kind of figuring out our products that we deliver to them?
So if you could look at the evolution, right, if you're running a manual operation today and that's working for you, you know, as demand ramps up, you're going to have a way to handle more volume. So if you're picking paper today, as an example, well, maybe that first step is you get some kind of voice type picking solution so that you can gain accuracy and gain order throughput very quickly in your current manual footprint. And as you start to outgrow that manual footprint, then you're going to start looking more automation. So, you know, there's a lot of levels of automation. Maybe you want to install an automated storage and retrieval system and fulfill orders that way. But perhaps that's still not going to fulfill the rate you need as you continue to grow. So you start there, and then you start adding on different components around the building, maybe automating receiving, automating the unload process to get, you know, product out of trucks faster with less injuries. And then, then you move into, you know, some of these like larger order consolidation type sortation areas, like I was talking about earlier. So if you can't consolidate quickly enough manually, then you start to add automation. And then at the very end, you have the shipping system. And by the time you get to the shipping system, usually throughput's going to demand that shipping system gets faster and faster and faster. So when you start looking at this, you want to think about, you know, how are you going to scale? What kind of rate are you going to need to run to keep up with your order demand?
So do you find yourself in warehouses themselves often?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of conference room presentations nowadays, but they're on customer site.
Yeah,
I've spent, you know, the last 22 years, I'm in and out of warehouses every year, different operations and whatnot.
Yeah. When you're ordering something yourself, you go to Amazon or wherever you're going to go. I hear you're a DIYer, so maybe you're buying some stuff that you're going to put together. Are you able to separate your day job from your personal life? Do you ever not think about how it'll be fulfilled once you press the order button?
No, usually when I walk in a store or I order something online, I know a lot of customers, so I do think about, I wonder if this came through, you know, one of the systems I've been in or something like that. And it blows my mind, like, people don't think about how it got on the front porch or how it got on that store shelf. You know, there's a lot of technology and a whole industry behind the scenes that you don't even think about. I honestly didn't think about it either until I got in this industry. I had no idea what a supply chain was or what it took to get, you know, goods from a manufacturer to your store shelf.
As I mentioned in the introduction, the two big trends, obviously, is just more and more e-commerce. And then I think the consumerization of this in B2C and B2B of faster delivery, faster fulfillment, right? What would it take? What is it going to take for same day shipping to be common, you know, to be a reality?
Well, Amazon's doing it right now, which is pretty amazing. But I don't know if you looked at the articles, it's at a high cost, right?
Right.
So the question is, how can you sustain it, you know, in the long run? And, you know, the trend that we're seeing is, you know, the next generation of warehouses are going to be urban and they're going to be closer to the population and they're going to have, you know, a very finite or a very well-groomed SKU set of frequent orders. And that's what we believe the future is going to hold. So you're going to have these large distribution centers that hold inventory and can get orders out, you know, at the scale that you need, but you're also going to have some kind of last mile close to the end user, close to the person making the order type system to just make it affordable in the long run.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I've read some things about the last mile, that being like both a symbolic and a real piece of this path. Are we playing a role in that? You talked about these urban warehouses, if you will. Is Honeywell's technology involved in that?
Yeah, yeah, that's where you're going to see a lot of automated storage and retrieval systems be employed. So we have that technology in the market as well.
Really cool. I mean, I think that the Amazons, like you mentioned, have made it a possibility, but at, like you mentioned, a high cost. So it's really a matter of when is it scale so that people expect it without paying a price for it. And that'll be interesting. So I would love to hear a little bit more about you because, you know, we've had a chance to talk a few times. Eric's been the star of one of the stars of our brand campaign and have had a chance to chat with him a few times. I will tell our podcast listeners. Got some intel from our crack staff here at the Future Is podcast about what you do in your spare time. So I need to ask about some of these things because I would not have spotted you as a motorcycle guy.
Oh yeah.
So what do you have a Harley or are you something different?
I do have a Harley. I have a Harley Road King and I love to take trips down into the Smoky Mountains. It's one of my favorite things to do. I just did a trip, last month.
Yeah.
December. We went down and camped, rode what's called the Tail of the Dragon, which is a really curvy road down in the Tennessee, North Carolina border, and had a great time. Spent a couple nights camping and rode about 1,000 miles.
Awesome. So do you go with like a group?
I go with my dad.
Your dad. Nice.
Dad's got a bike and we take a trip and then sometimes my son comes along as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool. So one of my best friends is a Harley owner and has been for about 20 years. And he gets bored every couple of years of his bike and gets a new one. how many Harleys have you gone through?
Just two.
Only two. Okay.
Only two. I had a Sportster and then I I got the Road King that takes some longer trips on, and I'm super happy with it. I've had it since 2012. So
the other piece of intel we've done is that you are a do-it-yourselfer on the electronic side. Tell me what that even means.
I like to tinker with electronics, so desktop robotics. There's small little self-contained robots called mini sumos that you can actually do competitions with. That's a dream. I haven't got to competition with those, but that's a dream where you put these two little robots in a ring and they duke it out.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just like to tinker with like the miniaturized technology. So it probably dates back, you know, when I was a kid. You know, I love to tinker around with like automation and relays and things like that. And, you know, this is just the latest way to do that. So instead of having to have all the circuitry, you know, you've got these microcontrollers so you can write some code. And my the thing that excites me the most about technology is when you see the software and hardware world interface with the real world. So mm-hmm. I love devices that have like input output, and you know, I can take I have this silly little project in my shed, you know, so my shed is an IoT Internet of Things connected device. And you know, it's constantly monitoring temperature and humidity, and it lets me know if it gets to freezing in there, and it lets me know if anyone enters or exits it or anything like that. So
we're saying Eric Rice's shed is an edge device?
It is an edge device, yeah.
See, that we are at Honeywell, we are connecting everything, including our employees' sheds.
That's right, including a shed.
That's awesome. So obviously the carryover to your job is direct, right? I mean, you're thinking about this stuff. We're delivering it at a, you know, obviously at a different level for customers, but clearly a connection, right?
Right. Correct. Yeah. I mean, I fully believe that the Industrial Internet of Things is going to be the next evolution of how our customers, you know, they get the most out of their systems from a throughput standpoint, they have the least downtime, and they can really augment and help better plan the labor that they're going to use.
All right. So I'm going to end our podcast with a few questions that I've asked each of my guests. And so we're going to start with question number one. I'm going to guess I know the answer to this. Well, no, maybe I won't. What did you want to be when you were a kid? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, I wanted to be a pilot.
Oh, like a commercial airline pilot?
Oh, no, come on. I want to be a fighter pilot.
Oh, got it. Right. Sure. Did you like dress up like a pilot? Did you ever fly a plane?
No, I never flew a plane. I mean, I've been up in private planes. I was an encyclopedia of military aircraft. So I studied everything. I could tell you all the silhouettes and, you know, point out the specs and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you have plenty of people at Honeywell you could talk to about that and across businesses.
I got to go to a tech symposium and talk with a guy that was designing automated flight controls, which mm-hmm. was really interesting and way over my head. So
isn't it fun to do that though, knowing that they're, you know, peers of ours are doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I was impressed.
All right, so second question, Eric, what is a piece of technology you can't live without?
Ooh, man, I'm pretty technically integrated. So so I probably can't live without my phone. That's probably the bare minimum. I have to have my phone.
What would be next?
Next would be my iPad.
Okay. All right. Last, and this is, I always find this telling just in the kind of people that we are talking to. How many unread emails are in your inbox right now?
Oh, right now, 80.
80. Well, that's pretty good, actually.
I try to keep up on it.
Yeah.
Now there's 4,000 red ones in my inbox.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you for spending time with me. Obviously, the world that you live in is so much a part of what everybody does every day. And yet so many people don't know what's happening between the clicking on the order and it appearing on our porch. So thank you for enlightening us a little bit.
Yep.
Appreciate it. And thank you for listening to this episode of The Future Is. Don't forget to subscribe to go behind the scenes of future technology. This episode was edited and produced by Cassie Cope.